Now, continuing our fascinating series of conversations with Maurice Misiolaski, this morning we're going to take a peep into the future of robots, how they're being used in medicine and healthcare, offices and factories, retail and homes, on our roads, defence and security, aged care, and what we can expect to see and have robots do in the next few years. It's exciting and scary. Maurice Misiolaski, the futurist, joins us. Hello, Maurice.
Hey, hello, James.
It is sort of exciting. It is also scary because if we're not careful, what are we going to do?
We've had that argument with ourselves for hundreds and hundreds of years. As we've innovated, brought new technologies in, we've always thought we're going to do ourselves out of a job. And I think most of us are now working harder, but certainly different than we ever did before. And I know many of us that have that mythical 1 or 2 days a week work and 5 days off.
Okay, so you're saying it could be a good thing and we'll probably adapt. And yet, especially when the economy starts to come under threat, the thought that robots could be doing these jobs and they could be doing them cheaper surely does worry us.
It's certainly an issue. Worry is really industry by industry, job by job. We're going through what I consider to be a third industrial revolution. We're changing the way we work, the sorts of things we work at, how we work. Everything about that term is now up for grabs, as it was 100 years ago and 200 years ago. We're certainly going to see displaced people. I mean, that's a nice way of saying that some of us will not be able to do the jobs that we currently do. They won't be commercially viable anymore. And that's never a good thing. There's nothing good to be said about that. But the reality of the way that we've lived our lives for millenniums is when we know better, when we know different, have new technologies, we evolve and we decide that's the way that we want to move forward with.
Let's look at some examples of where we're already seeing robots and where we will see them in the future. Let's just look at the home, for example, and already you can buy vacuum cleaners that you, I mean, Olivia's even got one where you program it, she goes off, does her shopping and comes back and the machine's back in its docking bay, the house is clean and she can put her feet up.
Yeah, we're starting to see a whole plethora of those. There's a lawnmower, which is the equivalent of that as well. Yeah. And when you think about what a robot is, which is really a machine that's able to do one or two tasks, we've had them for quite a while. We've had dishwashers, we've had our wash machines, we've had our dryers. Really, in many ways, they are robots. Mm-hmm. What most of us grapple with is that we have this romantic science fiction image of what a robot should be, which is an android, and that's a human-like object.
We expect it to have arms and legs, don't we?
Well, and to look a bit like us and to be able to talk a bit like us and carry on a conversation. It's that R2-D2 type thing that I grew up with. Certainly, that's my first default thought of what a robot is. But technically, it's a machine that does one or two tasks. Mm. It replicates some of the things that we might do as human beings. And we're certainly going to see androids as well, but they're not going to be, especially for the foreseeable future, they're not going to be the mainstream of what we're calling robots and what we're moving forward with.
So what will we move forward with at home, aside from obviously those machines that make life easier for us, the dishwasher and the vacuuming and the lawnmower? What about some robot that could, for example, when programmed, prepare breakfast, bring it up to you, bring it to your bed, that sort of thing?
I think we're going to see home automation certainly become something more common. We're going to see that our devices will talk to each other. So certainly what you're asking for can be done because it knows your alarm clock will go off at 8 o'clock, for instance, and it likes you. You like your bacon and eggs at a particular time and your tea done. It could start all of those things cooking for you. And I would assume could also have a robot that could carry it upstairs or wherever the bedroom is. But the individual bits and pieces of that, we're already starting to see evidence that it can be done. Mm. And you and I have talked about 3D printers before, which is a robot of sorts, and we'll be able to print food as well into that space moving forward.
Yeah, okay. We've now had our breakfast. We've washed, got dressed, left the house, got into the car, and hey, presto, that car drives itself to work.
Yeah, and really that's the evolution of driverless cars. Lots of conversations going on about that. Google is one of the big companies in that push, as are all of the major car manufacturers. What they're looking at is that autopilot scenario where you and I can step into a car. We either tell it where we want to go or it knows automatically, and it does all of the driving for us. Now, most people sit there aghast at that thought, but many of us already have some of those elements in our car. We have a GPS that guides us. We already have the ability to be able to put the press a little button and it automatically presses the accelerator for us and keeps us going forward. This next step, I think we're only about 4 or 5 years away from starting to see some of these innovations in our cars. Mm. We have already 3 states in the US that have legalized driverless cars on their roads. with a whole lot more pushing back. In Australia, we haven't had much conversation about them yet, but I do think we'll see them on our roads 5 years. Certainly by 2020, they will be somewhat common.
And it will change the way we use our roads. I mean, for example, you'll be able to have cars all following each other very closely, doing 80 kilometres an hour, for example, rather than having to space apart because they're safer.
Yeah, and we're told so far, anecdotally and in tests as well, that there are far less accidents with them because each car, as you've said, talks almost in a swarm-like approach.
Yeah.
So each car knows what each other car is doing. We're also starting to see that same technology being used already on great mining sites where the trucks are often remote-controlled.
Yes.
So there is no driver in the truck, but he or she is literally can be 10, 15, maybe even 1,000 kilometres away and driving great road trains with heavy haulage. One of the interesting asides off that was that I was talking to somebody at a conference the other week involved in that industry and involved in road construction, and they were saying that the roads that these driverless trucks are driving on are actually quite different, because what happens is that the truck drives straight. It never veers. The human driver veers the car slightly. What's happening is that there are divots in the road now from the tyres in the exact same spot, and the roads are actually wearing out in a completely different pattern than they did before.
Okay, so that could happen with our roads in general as well.
I mean, it's a strange comment, but it talks about what happens when we have these machines take over our car, the perfection with which they drive and the certainty with which they drive.
Interesting. Maurice Mizulaski, the futurist, with us this morning as our big interview, looking at the world of the robot in the future. So we get to work, and I would imagine that within the workplace, the use of robots could make some big savings for companies. What do you think?
They absolutely can. If we talk about manufacturing, for instance, there's a new robot on the horizon, been available for about the last 6 months, and he goes by the name of Baxter. Baxter is, I mean, almost android-looking in their appearance. It's a box, it has a screen on top, which is really a tablet, and then it has two deposable arms. So these arms are things that you can pick up and put down. So think about manufacturing where you'd pick and pack items, for instance. What's interesting about Baxter is that you can train him to move his arms in a particular sequence, so pick something up, put in a box, screw something in, whatever it is that's routine. You can teach him to do that in 90 seconds simply by showing him the task with his own arms, and he learns it. What makes this an interesting conversation and why Baxter's taken off is that it costs $22,000 US to buy him outright. And it equates to $3.52 per hour to use him.
But that's the point, isn't it? And when you do the maths like that, you think, wow, you know, I'd love to have a human being, but actually the figures add up.
And what that offers, one of the things on the horizon is that we might be able to bring back some of the manufacturing from China and other low-cost areas, because the Chinese worker is roughly around the same price point.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in some instances, our manufacturing, even though we're not bringing back jobs in that sense to Australia, we're actually bringing them back with all the ancillary work that can be done around that production point. Because as much as we strive, and I would love us to be a manufacturing country, we seem to be moving away from the ability to do that in the current sense.
Mm.
So why not, if we can find this interim measure?
Let's look at something which is a key issue, which is healthcare, and also our aging population. Where could robots really play a part here?
I think they'll play a huge part in especially aged care and healthcare, of course. We take our cue from Japan. Japan has an aging population and not as many people as it needs to care for those elderly. They have invented and are going to invent a whole slew of robots. There's a robot, for instance, that washes patients' hair. Now, I know it sounds like a strange thing again, all science fiction, but it's one of the mundane, important tasks that we need to offer to other human beings. It's a sense of dignity in being clean, being well-groomed. It's not that we can't offer people to do that, but if you think about how long it takes and how many people you have to tie up into that mundane task, important but mundane task, what we can do with a robot like that is to put one nurse or one person in charge of it and allow the other nursing staff to go on and offer the more acute care, the more human contact care that might be required. We're also starting to see telemedicine, which I think is one of the first things we'll see into our hospitals and healthcare providers. Telemedicine is the ability for a centralised doctor, so a doctor, for instance, in Perth, to sit in his or her surgery or wherever they are, and to manipulate an Android-type device into a hospital, perhaps in Melbourne or Afghanistan or Beirut or anywhere else on the planet, What they do is virtually take over that body. So it's a robot that walks around. On its head, again, has a tablet-type device, which is a face. The face of the doctor comes up onto that, and the doctor can manipulate the robot around the hospital, literally visiting patients. It's being done at the moment. Visiting a patient. On board some of those robots, they have a lot of the basic requirements. So they have the stethoscopes and all the other equipment that are either used by a nurse that follows the doctor or by the patient themselves. So the doctor's able to do consults in geographical spaces that she or he was never able to get to before.
Yeah, the mind boggles. What about the key issue here of trusting the robot to do the right thing, which I think is a key thing, but also when the robot might actually become cleverer than we imagined and it actually starts to, you know, almost control us?
That's a conversation that's taken us over 100 years or so, and I think it's going to take the next 100 years. It's really haptic interface robots is what you're talking about, is the fancy term for it. It's a robot that learns from its environment. It's pretty much taking its cue from you and I. We learn from our environment. In other words, we put our hand on the gas stove, it's too hot, we're not going to do that again. Robots at this stage can't do it, but there's a whole new breed of robots that we believe will be able to do it, and they're being built and devised at the moment. So we may one day see that type of scenario, but it really, like everything in technology, this is human-driven. It's up to you and I to take control of it. As always, with any piece of technology, whether that's a simple mobile phone, a computer, or a robot, we need to be its master and teach it what to do and give it boundaries. Yeah. Asimov, in his books, actually gave us some definitions of robots, which was interesting because he did this almost 100 years ago. He talked about three laws of robots. And when you talk to most of the robotic engineers today, even though this was a piece of science fiction, they kind of hold it as their creed for what a robot will be able to do and should be able to do. So its first one is that a robot must obey orders given to it by human beings, mm-hmm. except where such orders would conflict mm-hmm. with other laws. A robot may not injure a human being or through an action allow a human being to come to harm. Mm-hmm. And a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection doesn't conflict mm-hmm. with the first or second law. And strangely enough, even though that was written in 1942 by Asimov, it is, as I said, become the creed.
It's interesting that it's still, as you say, so old, but it still sounds so relevant today. I want to just ask you finally about what you are most excited about with regards to the future and where robots could play a part.
For me, it really is in the medicine. I think that what we'll be able to do with robots in medicine is phenomenal. It's one of the great divides at the moment. In the Western world, developed world, we have access to some degrees to medicine. We don't in the developing worlds. With telemedicine, we'll be able to put doctors into spaces we haven't had before. With nanorobots that we haven't spoken about, which are literally microscopic, we'll be able to put them into the body. And we've seen that in science fiction as well. And they'll be able to target perhaps a cancer gene, or they'll be able to take internal x-rays. So I'm looking forward to the day when robotics plays a much bigger part in our medicine and allows us to age well and helps us to eradicate some of the diseases, or at least to treat or tame the diseases and things that we're currently afflicted by.
As ever, fascinating conversation, Maurice. Thank you so much for your time this morning and for bringing us up to speed with the world of robots. And we'll talk to you again in a few months and take on another subject.
Look forward to it. Have thank a great you. Weekend. Enjoy the brisket too.
Yes, thank you. Maurice Michalowski, our futurist, with us every few months or so, looking at the world of the future, obviously what's around the corner, and exciting us along at the same time. But also, I don't know, element of fear when it comes to robots.